All right, everyone. Welcome back to Radio Lore. We're doing our next kind of batch of special programming for the month of December to keep you nice and happy and interested during your busy exam season. This day, I got a great one here. I've got Neil Acharya, co-producer of Drop the Needle, a music documentary that we'll talk a little bit about, and it'll be premiering, or it won't be premiering, but it'll be premiering at the Princess. For all of you listening for the first time tonight. So, Neil, thanks so much for joining us, and how are you going?
Oh, thank you, Jackson. I appreciate being on Laurier Radio and having the opportunity to talk about the film that will be screening tonight, Drop the Needle, at the Princess Cinemas in your town in Waterloo.
Awesome. So, just for people who maybe don't know, what can you tell us about Drop the Needle, kind of the premise and the top line?
Okay, I would say that Drop the Needle really is about an independent record store, a mom-and-pop record store in Toronto that essentially shaped and influenced contemporary music culture in Canada, really, and it did that organically. It started by, you know, just opening up a record shop on Yonge Street in Toronto and selling music that you probably wouldn't necessarily find in the major stores, and that being hip-hop and electronic music, all of that under the umbrella of underground dance music. And it really took off. I mean, that music became the music that kind of is what's popular now. Of course, now it's a pop version, but it really, yeah, that's what I'd say. It really shaped contemporary music culture in Canada, and Toronto especially.
Awesome. Now, before we kind of go all the way back to the record store inception, how did you get involved with this project, and what does a co-producer do?
That's a great question. Well, I'm a journalist, and I'm always looking for new stories. Primarily, I work in sports, and a friend of mine, who going back to high school, who I still keep in touch with, gave me a call one day, and he said, "Hey, listen, I'm thinking about a film. Let's talk about ideas." And that was one of the ideas that I put forth, and we came together on it, and the rest is history. That was in July of 2020, right during the pandemic, and we released it on October 22nd to the premiere was at Ted Rogers Hot Dogs in Toronto. So it was about a little over a two-year process, but that's kind of how the project was formed. I had known about Plato Record for many, many years, because in the mid 90s in high school, friends and family were into the DJ culture. We were in Kingston, Ontario, and you'd hear about this record store on Rap City. And of course, you couldn't buy these records, these hip hop records. My friends were listening to hip hop at the time, as was I. And you knew you had to go to Toronto to get them. You know, you couldn't download them. Mm-hmm. So there was only one way to get them. You had to drive to Toronto, and you found out where it was and went up there. And that was where I first became aware of it, probably around 1995 or 1996. It opened in August of 1990.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Now, not to assume too much, but I imagine most of the folks kind of in our demographic at the university now weren't even alive when that happened. What was the music culture, especially in those areas, kind of like back then, and maybe how is it different to how it is today?
Well, I'll go back one question too, because I forgot to tell you what a co-producer does. Like, I mean, a co-producer essentially comes together to help shape the narrative. It's really a title. Mm-hmm. I mean, essentially, Rob directed the film. I tried to shape the story as best as I could, add layers to it, and we kind of came together to put out what we did, which I think has worked out very well.
Awesome.
Now, your other question, which has already slipped my mind, I'm totally throwing you offline here, but yes, please repeat.
Yeah, for sure.
That last question. Yes, differences.
Yes.
The differences, well, I mean, it's probably the easiest thing to say is technology has allowed anyone to listen to anything at any time. So at that point, you had to seek it out. You had to hear it first. So it would have to be on college radio, usually, if it was underground music, underground, mm-hmm. Hip hop now, and I mean, electronic music to some degree, I guess you could say its popular form is EDM. That's mainstream music. Back then, you know, it wasn't. So, you know, techno, house, whatever you want to, you know, drum and bass, rap music was underground. So you'd have to seek it out. You'd see it on programs like Rap City and Electric Circus for more of the electronic stuff. And then you'd hear it. You'd probably hear it from your friends in the hallway at high school. And then you'd have to figure out a way to get it. Now, in some cases, you could get it in your local store. But in a lot of cases, if you wanted to get vinyl, especially if you're in a smaller town, you'd have to come to Toronto. Yeah. And even in Toronto, the people would have to go to specific places like Trax, which is featured in the film, on Yonge Street, and played a record. In fact, those two developed quite a rivalry, which you'll see in the film tonight.
Awesome. And I guess to that point, what I get out of that is there were maybe more tastemakers back in the day, such as Eugene. How does a tastemaker like that kind of change things for both the listener and the artist?
Well, I think just by supplying the music, I think you're right. Tastemakers used a lot in the film, the term tastemaker. Mm-hmm. Eugene hired people that knew the music inside and out, whether it was, you know, hip hop or house or techno or drum and bass or whatever it was, Latin, jazz. He'd hire the right people that knew that music inside and out, and then they would recommend to people that walked in that maybe they were looking for a certain record. Well, they'd say, hey, listen, check this out too. And they also had a sound system in there where they just play records, so you could hear it from the street. Mm-hmm. And you'd walk in, and that's how you'd hey, listen, I've just heard that. That's hot. They became tastemakers too by Eugene, especially the owner of the record store, by smartly aligning with college radio and handing off records to college radio and also to hot DJs in the city to play those records, to break them, because you could break a record back then. You can't really break a record right now. Yeah. In the sense of breaking it, meaning releasing it, being the first person to play it. He could give a record to a popular radio show or a popular DJ on that radio show, and the city would then hear it and then flock to his record store to buy it. And the same went for the club. If you heard that song in the club, you'd find out what it was, and then you could go to Eugene and maybe a couple of other places and get that record.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we talked a lot about, you know, things have changed. Some may agree, maybe they're worse than before. It's obviously difficult to maintain retail. I don't want you to give away too much of the content of the movie, but how does someone become so iconic and stay relevant after, I mean, things are very different than they used to be?
I think it's love, really. Eugene started this out of passion, and he maintains it now because of his passion for it. I mean, he's had some good fortune along the way, I think, as well. But really, you know, you hear a lot now about, like, oh, I've got this business angle and do this, and you can run through some Instagram tiles and there'll be some BS about strategies to, you know, make money and stay on. But, I mean, really the simplest thing is do what you love and dedicate yourself to it. Now, a lot of things have to go right, but that's basically, you could today... Eugene is at his shop. We're going to drive up in a couple of hours, but he's at his shop right now. And every time I phone him and say, hey, listen, we've got another premiere, or tonight is a Kitchener and Waterloo premiere, he's like, oh, man, I got to shut the shop up, you know, because he's busy doing what he loves. It's just, it's just, you know, mechanical for him, but it's fueled by a deep passion. He just loves business, which is very important to this too, but he loves the music, and he always says the music can never stop, and the way he's going, I don't think it will.
That's awesome. I think that's really cool to hear, and I can't wait to see how that plays out. Now, a question for you. As a journalist, how do you find a story that you're usually writing these stories down on, like, the newspaper or the internet? How do you find a story for a feature-length documentary?
Well, I mean, to be quite honest with you, this is the first story I've done that resulted in me working on a feature-length documentary. But I guess going back, I would say that for myself, I'm not really attracted to just churning out stories. I need it needs to spark something in me. So in a sense, I guess every story, if you're writing well, every story is almost done like a film in scenes. I have a great friend, Damon Fairless, who works at CBC, manages CBC podcasts, and he always said, you know, Neil, when you're writing, look at it like you're writing scenes, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, I think this resulted in a feature-length film because there were for so many reasons. Number one, Eugene is a great character. I hate to put it in those terms, but yes, he's a great character. Because he's he's a person, and I don't want to just whittle him down to just being a character. But yeah, he's great. The story, I feel, in this case, was told in kind of parts and fragments, and you'd see like a podcast or a little grainy clip on the internet. But I don't think it was all put together in the right way. But that all boils down to myself. When I go and I want to pursue a story, I don't pick things that are, first of all, it has to interest me. And second of all, what interests me is usually something that hasn't really been put out there in a major way. And that's not to say that people didn't know about Play-D. There's so many people more attached to that store than I am. But I definitely saw something in this case that I knew it would really work on a number of levels, Eugene being one. There's so many people that are famous now in their own right because of the store, whether it's starting from scratch, who's been all over the radio here, fantastic DJ who also DJs for Russell Peters. Russell Peters is in this. He used to go there. And there were layers to it. That's one of the keys too. There has to be, everyone has an idea. Oh, my buddy down the street, he's a unique guy. I'd love to do a documentary on him. But yeah, well, what are the other angles that, in this case, Eugene's, really, he started a record label in his basement and really fueled the next level, the next wave of hip hop, which is kind of, like you go a wave after that and you're looking at basically hip hop, and it's come out of Toronto and it's shaped the world. So I don't want to ramble too much, but I guess for me, it's always looking for something unique and just, going from there.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. One more before we wrap it up. You told me you were into the hip hop scene in the 90s. What are you listening to now?
it's a good question. I started listening to hip hop in the 80s with Public Enemy and Eric B and Rakim and groups like that. I kind of fell out of hip hop a little bit in the 90s. By the time my friends were going to Play-D and stuff, I was, by the time I got to university age around 1997, I'd actually started going back to like old Neil Young. But as for now, it's interesting. I guess if I'm just going to off the top of my head, because I basically, my music listening is essentially going to YouTube and just typing in stuff and then going on a deep dive or whatever you want to call it, down some wormhole. So it could be anything. It's not just hip hop. But I definitely, the last thing that's kind of caught my ear hip hop wise is Benny the Butcher and the Griselda. Out of Buffalo. But although I like Pusha T, I really enjoy Pusha T's stuff. And I mean, I don't know if that's super recent, but I know he's put out some recent stuff. But I'm all over the place. I could listen to anything. I mean, I might throw on Chief Keef. it really depends. And that's the luxury we have now in a way. It's you can go online and just type stuff in and you'll find stuff. So those in terms of like rap and hip hop, that stuff that I certainly will just, just pops into my head right now. There's also a ton of great Canadian stuff as well.
That's awesome. West Side Gun's my Griselda guy, but
yes,
Conway's good too.
Well, you know what, it's amazing because the way they put Buffalo on the map, for some erroneous reason people like to like take shots at Buffalo, but these guys are definitely they've put Buffalo on another level.
Yeah, they've put everyone on notice. Awesome. So just kind of, where can people find more about Drop the Needle and what can we look forward to next?
Okay, so first of all, check if you're free tonight, you can check out the film. It's at 9 o'clock at the Princess Cinemas, and again on Sunday at the Princess Cinemas. So go to their website. But Canterbury Pro, Canterbury Productions on Instagram, I think it's Canterbury Crescent Filmworks. which is Rob Freeman, the co-producer and director's film company. Mm-hmm. Go there. There's always good updates on what's next. And, you know, there are exciting things coming up. For example, there's Air Canada is screening the film. So if you're taking a plane domestically, let's say you're going to Calgary or you're going to Winnipeg, you can watch the film starting February 1st on your in-flight entertainment.
That's awesome.
You know, there's also other exciting news that you can't really explain right now, but there's several screenings coming up this Sunday again in Waterloo. We have Hamilton on December 22nd and again in the new year. There's two more in Toronto. So I would say check out Canterbury Crescent. You can also follow Play to Record at Play D. You can, you know, Google that and you'll find their Instagram and you'll find their Twitter. And my name's Neil Acharya. And if you can figure out how to spell my last name, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter as well. And I occasionally post some updates too.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Neil. Appreciate your time. And maybe I'll see you tonight, I guess.
You will see me tonight. Jackson, thank you so much for having me on. I love college radio. As I told you before we got on, I used to be the sports director at CFRC in Kingston, Queen's University, a long time ago. So I have nothing but respect for college radio. And you'll see tonight in the film why college radio is so profound and feeling the culture of underground music.
That's awesome. Thanks so much.